Okay, thank you everybody for being so patient, trying to get our technical support over here live. I just want to start off the class saying that we still have open sponsorships for this class and for other classes. So you could always reach out to Rabbi and Mrs. Wolf, Robinson Wolf, to sponsor a class. It really helps them achieve their goal. So today we're supposed to be talking about chapter 24, Perek Chaf Dalet. And Perek Chaf Dalet is kind of an interesting departure from what you normally think of as Hasidus. People usually come to Hasidus because it's so heartwarming, it's so connecting. I feel like I can't see some people. If you can't see me, feel free to move around. I can't move because Rabbi Wolf positioned me here. But if I can't see you, I'm missing out. So if you could move over a little bit, or I'll just keep on moving around to see you, because it's nice to speak to the real people who are here. And of course, thank you for being here if you're here live. So Chassidus usually is a space that people feel like they could come home to. There's a gentleness to the way that the Baal Shem Tov accepted every single Yid. The simple Yid was someone that he deeply thought was what Hashem wanted to connect to the most. The splendor of sincerity, things that feel very accessible to a Jew. And Chassidus always speaks about that, and that is very important. And Perek Chaf Dalet is, or feels, a little bit like a departure from that, because in this parak we're going to be talking about Averis. Okay, we're going to be talking about sins. And it could be a little bit heavy, but at the same time, it's so important to discuss and to really outline and make clear what exactly is happening when we engage with sinning. So I don't want anyone to feel disheartened. I don't want anyone to walk away feeling heavy. And at the same time, kind of like in the way that you think of the concept of taking ownership, it's very easy for people to walk through their lives and, you know, kind of like blame everybody around them. You know, that like these famous stories where like, or Mishalim, where a person's complaining, you know, I go into this room and this person smells, and I went to school and this person smells, or I touch this button and it, you know, it pinched my finger, and I touched that person and they pinched my finger. And then you actually look at yourself and you say, okay, maybe I'm the one who smells, or maybe my finger is actually injured. Right. So the concept is instead of blaming or shifting, the source for whatever it is that's happening onto somebody else, ownership is about looking within and saying, is there something here that I'm contributing to the dynamic? Is there some power that I am holding, that I am wielding over the relationship or the experience that I'm having right now? And on the one hand, it's hard to look at sometimes because we don't like to look at ourselves and say, hey, there's room to improve. But on the other hand, it's also so empowering and so powerful to look within and say, wow, I'm having impact on my environment, on my kids, on my husband, on my people, on the situation. I didn't realize how much power I had, how much power I was wielding. I was just speaking to someone and she was sharing how she's been doing a lot of work on herself. And what's interesting is she's noticing that she's back in certain situations with lots of different people. And she said, you know what? I'm realizing it's impossible that all of them have been working on themselves and now they're better people. What I'm realizing is I kept on running into them in ways that was making them react in certain ways. And now it's not happening anymore because I've worked on myself. So it was a little bit disappointing for her, and at the same time, so empowering to know that she could change the situation. She could change her relationships. So let's dive into Perek Chaf Dalet and let's see what the Alter Rebbe wants to bring us. It's a very powerful idea, and we'll try to make it practical at the end. So just to kind of bring together what we've been talking about, because we had a break and I haven't seen you in a long time, we have been talking about Hashem's unity. We've been talking about Achdus Hashem, the unity of Hashem. And we've been talking about it for the last few classes. What is Achdus Hashem? Why are we bringing it here? How does it have a practical ramification on our lives? We've discussed. Now, what's important to note is the last parak we've been talking about the mitzvahs and how a mitzvah impacts a person. So in the moment of the mitzvah, what is happening? In that moment, you are saying, Hashem, you are my master. In that moment, you are saying, Hashem, I am batel to you. I am nullified to you. I'm not listening to my own will. I am listening to your will, and I am performing that mitzvah. That's beautiful. The second thing we said was the impact of the mitzvah on you. What does it actually do? It can actually refine you as a person. The more mitzvahs that we do, it actually refines us as people and makes us better people. The more that you submit your will to Hashem's will and do good and create goodness in this world, the more it refines you as a person, makes you a better person. And the last one was, when we do a mitzvah, it creates unity between heaven and earth. It creates unity between Hashem and this world. And we were speaking last time, again, about how the Alter Rebbe is trying to bring forth this idea that all mitzvahs are equally important. And it was easy for us to understand that with the first reason and the third reason, meaning the first reason that you're submitting your will to the Eibishter with each mitzvah, it's equal, right? If you're doing a small mitzvah or a big mitzvah, if you're keeping Shabbos, or if you're deciding to make a bracha, or if you're deciding to say Madani, whatever it is, something that feels seemingly insignificant, lighting candles exactly by that minute and not the minute later could feel very insignificant maybe to some, or keeping the whole Shabbos and making sure that all those lamatas melachos are actually considered and kept. It could feel like there's like, it's called kalas and chamuras, smaller mitzvahs and bigger mitzvahs, mitzvahs that seem to have larger impact. And in ways, the Torah also emphasizes that certain mitzvahs have larger impact. However, the Alter Rebbe is saying that according to this reasoning or this this implication of a mitzvah, it's equal in Hashem's eyes. Whether it's a tiny insignificant thing or a greater thing, either way, you are still submitting your will to the Eibishter. You're not listening to your own will, you're listening to Hashem's. And the same is true with the third reason, where what's happening when we do a mitzvah, that we are uniting Hashem and earth, right? We're creating unifications. And that has lasting, eternal impact on this world. And that also makes all mitzvahs equal. Whether you're doing a small, tiny mitzvah, whether you're doing a huge mitzvah, in that way, you're still creating something eternal and forever. So here in this parak now, the Alter Rebbe is going to take that and turn it into the opposite, right? What's happening when we're engaging with an avera? What is the situation there? So when it comes to an avera is, according to the Alter Rebbe, it's a defiance of God. It's saying, I know you're there, I know you exist, and right now you could take a step back and I'm going to do what I want to do. That's the way the Alter Rebbe looks at an avera. An avera is you having an act of merida. Merida in Hebrew is like a rebellion. It's an act of rebellion. It's a rebelliousness. I'm going to do what I think I want to do. When we talk about Avodah Zarah, right, the avera of Avodah Zarah, right, the second commandment, don't believe in any other gods. So oftentimes we think of this like archaic thing of taking a stone and carving it and making some sort of face on it and offering oil on it. That is not what Avodah Zarah is, according to the Alter Rebbe here. Avodah Zarah is when you know that there is a one God, and at the same time, you decide to give more energy or more impact, more importance to something else, namely here when you're doing a sin to yourself. And you're saying, yes, we connected in shul, in synagogue, we're on great terms, God, and now I'm going to walk out and I'm going to do something that I want to do here that is against your will. And that act of defiance has the same ramifications that a mitzvah has, but just the opposite, okay? And so here the Alter Rebbe goes into what are the ramifications of an avera? What happens when a person engages with sin? So why is the Alter Rebbe discussing all of this? Again, the Alter Rebbe is trying to take away the stigma of a small mitzvah versus a big mitzvah. All mitzvahs are the same. Here again, the Alter Rebbe is trying to do the same thing with averas. A small avera and a big avera are all equal in front of his eyes. Before Hashem, they are all equal. Okay, so let's look at what happens when we're doing an avera. The first thing that happens is we're telling Hashem, back off. you had impact on my day. You thought that you were important in my day up until here. And now I'm ready to do something that I want to do. That act of merida, that act of rebellion is the first kind of like idolatrous act. It's telling Hashem, mix out, you know, mix out, stay away. For right now, I'm doing my own thing. The next implication is when we do an avera, again, just like with a mitzvah, it has lasting impact on us. Just like a mitzvah refines us and makes us a better person. And avera works in the same way, just the opposite. And avera, basically sin begets sin. And what ultimately happens is, and this is often the case, I speak to a lot of people, but it's not even about other people. I feel this also within myself that, you know, I could be telling myself I could stop whenever I want. At any point, I could just, you know, stop doing this avera. It's not really having a lasting impact. And then what happens is slowly but surely, when a person is actually ready to really look at that avera seriously and say, this is not going to be a part of my life any longer, they find it almost impossible to overcome because having engaged with it again and again and again, they've lost the ability to actually stop doing that avera. So in ways, it's hard to look at, but it compromises us. It changes us. It makes us into, it weakens us, literally. Another example is it can, just like a mitzvah refines us, an avera also engaging with something that is vulgar for a long time and whatever that avera is, right? So I definitely know my averas, but typical avera would be like, let's say, losing your patience with someone and getting angry, jealousy, thinking that it's okay to speak about another person, looking at things that you're not supposed to be looking at, right? Not all of those things are engaging with a part of yourself that is vulgar. And what happens is slowly but surely one loses their sensitivity towards that vulgarity, right? So a person could, the first time they engage with that anger, feel like, oh, that wasn't me. I feel badly that I let myself loose and I screamed at that random person or I screamed at that child or whatever it is that I did. And then the next time there's a little bit less guilt and the next time a little bit less guilt. And then it just becomes a part of you. And unfortunately, just like a mitzvah refines you and makes you a more elevated person, and avera, the more one engages with it, one loses that sensitivity that they had and then becomes the vulgarity of that sin. And the last thing that I think is important to say is when we look at a sin, when we look at an avera, it creates a wall between you and the Eibishter. And it's kind of just like linking off of everything that what we've been saying up until now, but it creates a disconnect between you and the Eibishter. And the opposite is true when it comes to mitzvah. Mitzvah is all about tzavta. Tzavta is connection, bondage. And avera is the exact opposite. It's creating a wall and building that wall of disconnect. And it's so hard to overcome that avera when you're feeling desensitized, vulgar, and like you have a wall between you and Eibishter. It's very hard to experience. Obviously, we have the whole concept of teshuva, and I'm not taking that away, but it's very hard to then get back to that space of feeling connected to the Eibishter and working away from that vulgarity. So why are we talking about all this? Because, like we were saying before, every single avera is doing the same thing. All averas are equal. Now, what's interesting to note, you have a question? Yeah, sure.
So that's the avera. Is that big avera? What if you said it's equal, all the averot is equal?
That he killed someone in self-defense?
Yeah.
Is that an avera?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that's an avera.
Okay.
In self-defense, killing someone? No. You're supposed to definitely defend yourself if your life is being threatened. Now, at the same time, it still is, and I'm not speaking about him, I'll speak about myself. Knowing that I've been put into situations where, yes, I had to do something, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with what I had to do, and at the same time, Hashem put me in a situation. I'll give you an example. This is a funny example. One time, I think I thought I. Let me just finish this piece, and I think it's an important piece, and we're gonna actually explain it a little bit more. So, something. So many times this has happened to me, right? So even if I'm justified in doing what I have to do, let's say I have to criticize someone, right? I have to tell them, point out to them something that they're doing. Or I want to give you a better example. A simple example. So there's a lot of squirrels here when we're driving, right? There's a lot of crows. And one time I thought I hit a crow. Okay. And I felt so bad. I'm a real animal lover. And the thought process was, it was a mistake. I didn't mean to, you know, it was there. And then the next thought was, but still it happened, right? Hashem made it happen. And there's something for me to learn from that. It didn't happen to somebody else, the car before me, the car after me. It happened to me, which means that was an opportunity for me to learn that there's something here that needs to be refined. There's something here that needs to happen. There's a famous story about David HaMelech where someone insulted him. I'm forgetting his name. Someone cursed him, right? And Hashem had intended that person to curse David HaMelech. Right? It was supposed to happen. And at the same time, there's a reason why it happens through him. Why did he have to be the agent through which that happened? And then that person was basically Chayav Misa, because if you insult the king, you're Chayav Misa. Why did it have to happen through that person? It did. And we have that all throughout the Torah. Let's say there's a certain town that they find a dead body within the parameters of their town. It's not their fault necessarily. Although some might say that they didn't give him enough tzedakah, they didn't feed him, and that's why he died in their city limits. Is it really their fault? But something happened there, right? Why did Hashem make it that it happened in their arena? There's something for them to learn and to grow from, and in ways to refine themselves a little bit more, because it happened to them. Nothing's happening by chance. So I'm not saying anything about this person, obviously. Hashem Yishmer, no one should be in a situation where their life is threatened. Nothing is wrong with defending yourself. And no one also wants to be an agent through which that happened. Yes, exactly. Taking somebody else's life. It's a terrible thing. It feels awful, I'm sure. Hashem Yishmer. Yeah. And in ways, all of us, because we've all been exposed to it, can also refine ourselves, right? I don't know where it's brought down in halacha, but the idea is that if something happens, maybe not to you, but to a friend of yours, some sort of tragedy, there's a reason why it happens, not just to that person, but also that you're in close proximity to that person. It's not just, it's their problem. We're all connected. And if I'm experiencing even an element of pain, it's because I'm supposed to be going through that refining experience. Wow.
Someone came to the house. I wasn't but I was fine. And he said, I have delivery for you. I said, okay, put it right here. He said, no, you have to go to outside.
Mm.
Then he came up and I to my throat. He wants to let me.
Wow.
And I did all my best. I said, listen, I have a serious disease. Don't touch me. I have corona and I have woman disease. And I begged him. God did everything for me. Wow. I was begging him, I was asking him, and I started calling him son, go to look at him. And he said, I want you to okay with you the end. I want you in bed.
Wow.
And everything was, I felt the angels on the top of my shoulder. Until I get rid of him, and I promise to him that I will go with him anywhere he wants. Just.
Wow.
Just take the life off my neck.
That sounds like a very, very traumatic story. Wow.
But thank God everything works out.
Wow. Well, yeah.
I was afraid not to be killed. I wasn't meant to be late.
Right. Right.
Scary moments.
Yeah. Well, Baruch Hashem, you are saved.
The sickness, the woman's sickness, I hear if you get it, you never could to have children, you never could to, because you died.
Wow. Well, Baruch Hashem, Hashem put that in your mind to say, saved you. Hashem saved you. Baruch Hashem. Of course.
Although my mouth was like dry, I couldn't even scream.
Wow. Yeah, so there are those traumatic moments which are very scary, and it's a very big deal to be able to say, Hashem orchestrated this for me to learn something from or to refine somehow myself through. And it's not really something that somebody else could say about somebody else. It's really something you could only say about yourself. But thank you for bringing that here. Yeah, wow. No, Baruch Hashem, you're here. So these three things that happen when a person is engaging with an avera, right? So in the moment, they're saying, Hashem, bug off. Hashem, I don't want you in my life. The second one was the lingering affects of an avera, how it can make a person feel vulgar and desensitized and less than. And the last one was, and this is not the one that we really like to think about at all, but when we spoke about mitzvahs, we spoke about how that mitzvah is infinite and how that mitzvah lasts forever. What you're creating, the energy that you're creating with the mitzvah, how that lasts forever. And the opposite is true as well. And it's a little bit different though, because as we spoke about with the mitzvahs, a mitzvah is something that's true, right? It comes from Hashem. It's emes. Emes stands. Emes doesn't need a person to acknowledge it, right? If there is a truth, 2 + 2 in the world, and there's nobody in the world to say 2 + 2 = 4, it still means that 2 + 2 = 4, right? It still is there, even if a person doesn't acknowledge it. And avera is sheker. Sheker needs someone to believe it. Sheker needs someone to be there to acknowledge it. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. So when we say that a sin lives on, we're not saying that the sin itself created an energy that lives on forever. What we're saying, though, is the sinner is always impacted by that sin. And that sin lives on within the sinner. Because when a person, when a yid engages with an avera, what they're doing is, instead of becoming a merkava, a chariot for Hashem's will, now they have become a chariot for something else. And that's something else we're going to talk about in a minute, but that something else is now taking his neshama or her neshama and dragging it into the depths. And that's something that the neshama doesn't recover from. And yes, all throughout Chassidus, we talk about teshuvah. And this is the only place in Chassidus where it says that the impact is lasting. Everywhere else, we talk about, you know, teshuva and how teshuva can refine you. And even here, the Rebbe talks about how you can achieve a much higher level of teshuva, and it could still remove the impact that the neshama had when it was dragged into the depths. And the example that the Alter Rebbe says here is Hashem Yishmer, but like taking a king and rubbing his face into a bathroom. And that's what we're doing when we're taking the neshama and engaging in a sin. We're creating a lasting impact on that neshama. And again, it's not fun to talk about or to think about. And at the same time, it's so important to look at with ownership at what is our lives and what are we creating in every moment of our lives. Are we creating connection with the Eibishter, or are we creating the opposite? And what is happening when we're creating the opposite? So again, the Alter Rebbe is trying to prove this idea that every avera is the same. There's no little avera or big avera. Every single time we engage with avera, we are still doing the same thing. We're telling Hashem, you're not as important to me in my life. Now, after this, the Alter Rebbe starts explaining, and he kind of like broadens the idea that we just brought and makes it so much larger than what we were just talking about, because he basically brings this refrain, which is, and I wrote it down, hold on, Sitra Achra V'Klipa Hanikra V'Edizara Elikim Achirim. And he basically says, Sitra Achra, which we discussed before, Klipa, is called Avayda Zara and Elokim Achirim. And he basically equates all four of these terms and basically says, all of them are the same. What is Sitra Achra? I skipped around, but it's okay. Sitra Achra says, I don't exist to serve Hashem. I exist to serve myself. That's it. I have a self-serving ideal here. It's not about him. It's about me. What is klipa? Klipa is you have an neshama, you have something precious, you have something that deeply acknowledges the Eibishter, you have a godly truth, and it's covered up. It's not able to express itself. It's only able to live a lie, live the outside, live the external. What is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is idol worship, where I'm saying that there's a separateness, there's distinction, there's difference, as opposed to what we really know, which is Achdus Hashem, which is what we've been talking about all this time, which is there's nothing separate from him. Everything is within him. He is everything. But Avodah Zarah is saying, okay, he's here, he's in the shul, or he's at home, or he's in this situation, he's at 9 o'clock, he's not at 10 p.m. That's what Avodah Zarah is. And Elokim Acharim is the exact same thing, right? Other gods, serving other gods, having other interests, otherness. All of that distinction, difference, otherness, all of it is saying the same thing. Sitra Achra, Avodah Zarah, Klipa, Elokim Acharim are all one. And every time we engage with an Avera, we're engaging with that energy of otherness, of you don't matter, only I matter right now, or what you think or what you want doesn't matter. And all of that is all under the same category. So in a way, the Alter Rebbe has now just brought what an Avera is and brought it really to a very strong sense of this is not just wrong, this has godly implications, this has impact on the world and lasting impact on yourself. An interesting story that Rabbi Paltiel shared that I think really makes it even more relatable, more intense, but also very beautiful. He shares this story about this man whose name is Barry Farber. He used to be this news reporter. He was a Southern Jew, very not connected to Yiddishkeit, but still had this Yiddish heart. And he was interviewing a Chabad rabbi from Nashville, Rabbi Posner, a very smart man. And he was interviewing him on live radio. And he gave him the question that every Jew/rabbi fears most getting. And it was the question of capital punishment. Why does the Bible talk about capital punishment? And capital punishment is a big, big, really controversial subject, especially in the Western world, because most of us want to believe killing is a bad thing. And why should good people do bad things? And why should we kill someone for doing something bad? Instead, let them while away in prison and let them just stay there, even if we have to pay a lot of money to keep them there. Because ultimately, capital punishment is bad and we shouldn't be engaging with that. So why would the Torah prescribe that? Why would the Torah tell us to engage with capital punishment, right? A lot of the Averis, I'm studying with my daughter for these tests she has in school. And in the test, you have to know whether when a person does an Avera, it's basically studying all the mitzvahs and all the Averis, all the leitases and all the ases. And you have to know what is the actual punishment for each Avera. And some punishments are according to Beis Din, and some punishments are Chayiv Misa. Which Chayiv Misa? Are they getting stoned? Are they getting hot lead poured down their throats? Is there, all sorts of different punishments. So this Barry Farber asked Rabbi Posner, tell me about this. Why does the Bible talk so much about capital punishment? And it's a really hard question to ask, especially on live radio. And this is what Rabbi Posner said, which I think is a very good answer, but listen to the story. So he said, first thing you have to know is capital punishment, according to Yiddishkeit, is not revenge. It's not about making that person suffer because of what he did and he should suffer again, for doing whatever it is or whatever she did. It doesn't matter. It's not about revenge. It's not about cleansing society and making sure that society is pure. It's not about deterring other people from doing the same thing. It's not about that at all. It's actually a cleansing for the person, for that person to be able to achieve Olam Haba. They have to be able to have some sort of compensation, it's a funny word to use, in this world so that they can move on to the next world. Now, that being said, capital punishment hardly ever happens, because in order for that to happen, there had to be two witnesses, and they had to both warn the person who's about to do the avera of the ramifications of that avera and how that avera is not allowed to be performed moments before it was being performed. And if the witnesses were somehow not kosher, and there's like certain ideals for what a kosher witness is, or if they didn't deliver it properly, or if somebody else brings some sort of other proof, then there was no capital punishment. So it hardly ever happened. And of course, the Jewish court is supposed to be there to see the best in every single person and vindicate instead of, God forbid, the opposite. But that was his answer. That's what Rabbi Posner said. Now, unbeknownst to Rabbi Posner, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was actually listening to the live radio. It was a Matzah Shabbos, and he was listening to it. And he spoke about it at the following for Rankin. And he brought up this radio show, and he spoke about the answer. And he said, it's a good answer, but it's not the right answer. And the answer that the Rebbe said that Rabbi Posner should have given was, simply put, that if the master of the world, your master, the person who created this world, who keeps you in existence at every given moment, and he told you to do something, and you decide not to do that thing, that's it. That's an avera. If Hashem said that this should be done, if capital punishment is the deserving punishment of this person, then that's what it is. Now, what happens is unfortunately within ourselves, we start second-guessing ourselves. We second-guess the ramifications of our mitzvahs. We second-guess, does Hashem really care about this minute, whether I'm benching licht, you know, at 2:21 or at 2:22, 4:21 or 4:22? Does he really care? Does he really want? Do these small details matter to him? My small mitzvahs and my small averes? What's really happening is we're looking at our own insignificance and thinking and projecting that Hashem also thinks that it's insignificant. But Hashem is infinite. Hashem is not bogged down by details like we are. He's the master of the world. He orchestrates every single tiny detail of this world. Nothing is insignificant to him. But what happens is we lose sight of that. And we get bogged down because we're not God by the details of the world, by little things. And we start taking away credence from those little things, from the power of what we can create and the power of how much damage we can do. And so the Rebbe said he missed out on sharing that with the world, that if the master of the world tells you something, it's not a suggestion. It's what he wants. It's his will. What's so beautiful about that, it reflects how much emuna the Rebbe had, right? To him, Hashem is real at every given moment. What do you mean? How could we even question his will? And of course, that's the answer. The problem is when we lack the das. Das is that connecting with an idea, connecting, deeply understanding that I have impact. I have impact with my mitzvah and I have impact with my avera. But we lose that das. And the way the Alter Rebbe talks about it here and in other sources, he says, what actually happens is a moment of insanity where we lose connection with our deep understanding, our neshama's understanding of our connection to Hashem and how he is the master of the world. And we have this like moment of just like losing sight of that, losing sight of who we are and who he is and everything around us. And that moment of insanity leads to that avera. But really, if we worked on our das and deeply connecting to the idea that Hashem is master of the world, and thinking about Achdus Hashem, and this is what we were talking about the past few weeks, the more we think about that, the more it impacts our day-to-day life, and we wouldn't be having or experiencing those moments of insanity, then we'd be able to deeply understand how powerful our actions are for the good and for the bad. So the Alter Rebbe then concludes with describing something that's even deeper when it comes to Nevera. Because we have free will, we have the ability to make our own choices, and Hashem gives this to us as a gift. When we make a free choice and choose to do something that is wrong, we're going beyond what He designed for us, what He wanted from us, how He had programmed us. When you think about, let's say, Bilam, right? Bilam was a non-Jewish prophet, and he had this whole discussion with King Balak. Balak wanted him to curse the Jews, and Bilam told him, listen, I hate the Jews just as much as you, maybe more, but I cannot go past the will of God. I am a prophet of God. These are the parameters that I have with Him. I cannot do something against His will. I can't. I can't do it. I can't. If I did that, then I would be making a free choice and going beyond what I'm supposed to be doing. He knew his limitations. He wasn't a good person, but he knew that he wasn't allowed to go past that. Unfortunately, when a yid engages with an avera, he goes past that. He goes beyond the way he was supposed to be programmed. He's going into uncharted territories that were not allowed to him. The same with a guy. A guy has seven mitzvahs he has to keep. If he doesn't keep to those mitzvahs, the same thing is happening. He's going beyond the parameters of what he's supposed to be doing. And in ways, the Alter Rebbe says here, he's less than, in ways, an animal. The Alter Rebbe describes a gnat. It's some sort of, I guess, fruit fly or gnat that only eats, but it doesn't secrete. And he says that's the epitome of Sitra Achra, that it just says, give me, give me, give me. It just takes it all in and it doesn't even give out anything, not even defecation. Not even that. That's like the epitome of selfishness. And the Alter Rebbe says here, when a person engages his free will, uses that gift to go beyond the parameters of what how Hashem has programmed or created that person to be, what he's doing is he's taking himself and he's doing more or worse than that Sitra Achra. He's taking himself and he's bringing himself to a space beyond. He's dragging himself to a space beyond going worse than the way he's been programmed. So how do we walk away from this and think, okay, what am I going to do here? How do I have lasting impact on my day? How do I make this a day-to-day concept? So on one foot, first of all, don't be disheartened, right? We've all done averis. We've all been there. We're doing them every single day. And Hashem, at the same time, is here with you, unconditionally loving you throughout. Every given moment, He's saying, I forgive you. I know we're still connected. And He's watching us engage with the avera, and at the same time, still holding open space for us to return back to Him at every given moment. That generosity is infinite. That generosity, that love is essential. It's always there. It's always within reach. And that's something that we have to keep in mind within ourselves, because then we're just giving space for the Yitzhahara to bring us down further. How easy is it for me, I know, to get caught up in, you know, feeling guilty about something or feeling like I messed up somewhere and just get dark and angry and upset at myself, and it's not going to proactively change anything. That's just the way that Yitzhahara or that voice inside you is just miring you into the avera even more, as opposed to acknowledging that there's something here that needs to change. Taking a deep understanding of what an avera does and what engaging with the sin does and saying, I don't want to identify with that. That's not me. That's not who I am. I don't want to be a creative force for sin. I have a purpose in this world, and I know that Hashem is holding space for me at any given moment to grasp onto something different. And if I can just do some small, slight thing to change the way that I am behaving around this certain area, whether it's, I don't know what it is, lashon hara, losing my patience, getting angry, being jealous, let's get some averis, not making a kiddush Hashem, failing in kashrus, let's say, you know, not being careful about checking for bugs, whatever it is, right? If I could make one slight change in that area that I know I'm not doing the best in, and saying, Hashem, I'm choosing you instead, you're going on a different trajectory. You're no longer in that avera gereres avera, sin begets sin train. You've now hopped onto a different train. And even that one small change is taking you into another trajectory, another direction entirely. And then that can grow. But the most important thing is to think, is there something small here that I can shift? And even that one small thing is me saying, Hashem, your will is greater than my will, and you're shifting right back into the realm of mitzvah. Mitzvahs create more mitzvah. Mitzvah gereres mitzvah. Because again, what is a sin? A sin is denial of Hashem. It's defiance of Hashem. It's merida. It's saying otherness, distinction. I am me. I have my own will. You don't belong here. As soon as I get back into that mind frame of, no, Hashem's will is deeply important to me. I see him, I feel him in every aspect of my life. And I want to actualize that. I want to act from that space. You're already in that space of teshuva, of refining, of coming out of that vulgarity, whatever it is, and stepping forward into the light of Hashem and what he wants to create, and bringing those unifications between him and the world, and doing what we're supposed to be doing in this world. So although it's a little bit heavy, Parak Chaf Daled, it's also in ways empowering. If I know what is happening, right? If I know the impacts that I have, it inspires me to go towards what I really want. What I want to create. And to me, just a little bit, what this sounds like to me is kind of like hitting rock bottom when a person fully sees, okay, I know that this can't go on. This is not what I want any longer. And then they make that shift, that huge shift. But it takes a long time sometimes for a person to hit rock bottom and say, this is not okay any longer. Something needs to change. So I want to give everybody a bracha to hit rock bottom in whatever it is that we're experiencing, whatever challenge that we are struggling with. I know I'm definitely there. And once you get there, there's a sense of peace, right? I know I can't go any further, right? It can't get any worse than this. So the only way is up, and I could lean on the Eibishter to carry me through this. He's been here throughout, holding space again and again and again for me to realize what's going on. And now I can. And now I will. So that was Parak Chaf Daled. Be'ezus Hashem, we'll continue with Parak Chaf Hey next time. Wish you all a beautiful next 2 weeks. Yeah, so welcome.